Did you know that rhubarb is a superfood? Well, next up on Garden Talk, we're going to take a closer look at this vegetable that's also a fruit. I'm Jill Nadeau, and this is the Larry Mueller Show. Here to talk about the history of this versatile plant and share some recipes is Nina Murkaji Furstenow. She is a food journalist and writer and has written 5 books. Her latest is The Pocket Rhubarb Cookbook. Nina also has a podcast that's available through NPR called Canned Peaches. Do you like to cook with rhubarb? What's your favorite recipe? What questions do you have about the plant? Well, we'd like to hear from you, so give us a call at 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Nina, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really glad to be here.
Oh, great. Well, you know, thank you for writing this little book, because when I first saw it was coming out, I'm like, oh, we've got to do that, because I love rhubarb, and it's just everywhere, it seems like, and this time of year especially. Why did you choose to write about rhubarb?
Well, I think, you know, a couple of reasons. One, it's kind of an unusual flavor profile for many people, and it's such a sensation when it comes out here in Missouri, because we don't have as long a season as you probably do where you are.
Yes.
And so when it comes out, it is a true mark of spring. And it's such a lively plant to work with if you are a cook or a baker. It's just a lovely, you know, addition to cooking, and both savory and sweet. And I found it really unusual to work with.
For sure. And you didn't, you know, you came to it a little bit later in your life, right? You had never tasted it before. Tell us what it was about rhubarb that got you interested at first.
Well, I think it's one of those plants that, you know, there are sour and tastes like that in other, you know, other kinds of dishes that we all love. Sour cherry pie, for instance, or, you know, there are dishes like that. And when I was a, you know, Girl Scout age in grade school, I would go to 4-H as well. And they were in the spring, you would see these sour pies. And I found them so fascinating because they also had that comfort of sweetness as well. And I just developed a palate for it. So, I really liked that contrast. And so that makes it a fun food for me.
Do you find that people either love it or hate it, and very rarely they're in between?
Maybe so, but I can't imagine that not loving it. But, but I have come across a few people who sort of make a grimace when I talk about rhubarb. And I think they just didn't have a good childhood experience with it. And maybe they had stewed rhubarb without much else. And you know, it can be pretty intense. So when our taste buds are young, sometimes that would make an impact in your memory. But most people really like it.
Yeah, that's what mostly I've come across too. Now, where did rhubarb come from originally? Were you able to figure that out?
I think so. So it's most sources and research sources say that it comes from Southeast China in the highlands. And it is a plant that loves cooler weather, and especially the original variety. It kind of trundled along. I should not try and say the word trundled on the radio. It traveled along the Silk Road when traders were bringing many goods from the east to the west. And I think was known as a medicinal plant to begin with. I think it kind of became more used in culinary uses after the rise of sugar, and it became a little bit more palatable with sugar. And also the varieties changed, as it did not grow in Europe. So when it came into those lands, there were hybrids developed that grew better in those soils and those climates. And those are the varieties that came to the New World in the U.S. So by the time it hit the U.S., a lot of the plants that we're used to thinking about that were planted along the back fence rows in a lot of farmhouses in the Midwest, at least. And those plants often were brought by European American settlers, often Germans, maybe French. They brought that with them because they were already well known to the European people. Mm-hmm. We did not have it here until they came.
Well, we've got a caller, Dennis in Two Rivers, with a comment. Go ahead, Dennis.
Hi. When my family lived on a farm, I used to just pick rhubarb and eat it raw.
Oh my gosh.
But then after we moved to the city, like a decade or so ago, my parents had rhubarb in the city, and I didn't like it. So I don't know if it's a different kind of rhubarb, or if there's different soil, or maybe my taste buds have changed. Do you have any theory on that?
Thanks, Dennis.
I'm sorry, Jill.
Go right ahead.
ready to jump right in. So I think it could be several factors, and I think you identified some of them. But taste buds do change, I think, every 14 days when you're young, and it spreads out longer as you age. And also the sharpness of rhubarb might taste differently for that reason to you now than it did when you were young. But if you were eating it raw as a youth, I'm impressed, first of all, and also the... it may be a different variety, though I think over time rhubarb has become a little quicker to cook. We kind of want things that don't take an hour to soften anymore on a stove, and so it could be a different variety, but I would think more your own taste of it has changed a bit.
And maybe when you picked it too, bigger they get, they don't taste quite as good. I thought it was really interesting when I was reading your book about it would take an hour sometimes back in the early 1800s for rhubarb to soften up. So yeah. Things have changed.
If you do that to rhubarb now, as I mentioned in the book, it would be jam.
Yes,
well before an hour was up.
For sure. Now, I had mentioned in the preview that rhubarb is a superfood. Explain why that's the case.
Well, I think it's just like a lot of plants that have absorbing good soil, micronutrients, and the sun. You get those in the plant, and then you're consuming that plant. So that is really good for us if we can do that in season. And I do think that is, when it's not processed and it's fresh and it's out of a garden that's not using a lot of chemicals, it's a superfood.
Gotcha. And there's some good things in it too. Vitamins, minerals, fiber. It's really got a lot of fiber in it.
Fiber, and that was originally why it was a medicinal plant, is it was kind of the pharmacy for the old world, because people couldn't just go to the, corner and Walgreens or whatever pharmacy you use and pick up something that would help you, your digestion. And so grandmothers across the world and physicians and so forth realized how good it was at balancing your system and making you feel good. Even texts as old as, I'm going to mess up the years, but early Chinese texts, they thought of rhubarb as a way to feel good, just to be kind of in balance and well. The rest of us really liked it because if we ate too much food that made us not have a regularity to how we digest things, it would help us quite a bit.
How did they prepare it at that point? Were you able to find that out?
It was the ground root. So it was not the leaves. It was not the actual stalk that we eat now. It was the root.
Mm-hmm.
And that it became very valuable for that, because as you could imagine, if you didn't have a lot of plants you could just go buy at the corner store, pills or any kinds of medicines, then a plant that would help you feel in balance is a really valuable tool.
And you could store it a lot longer than you could any of the fresh parts, I would assume.
I would assume so.
Yeah.
They brought it west with them, and I think that's how it got to be so well known.
Sure. Now tell us about the plant itself. Where and when should we plant it?
I think you can plant it now, but you're not going to see anything to be eaten from it for another year. But it's a perennial, so you want to put it where it will be okay size-wise after it gets to be mature. You don't want to crowd it too much. In Missouri, it gets 3 to 4 feet tall and maybe as wide. Now, I had plants when I had a place out in the Pacific Northwest, and I think that plant might have been 6 feet tall. With, you know, rhubarbs have these huge leaves that are frilly on the outside, and it would wave in the wind, and I thought it was from outer space. But in Missouri, they don't get quite that big, and I maybe that's a sad thing, but they are quite beautiful. I call them a handsome plant. Mm-hmm. They have red stalks and nice, pretty deep green leaves with the frills. And I just think they're gorgeous. And I actually recommend, I know you had a speaker just talking about perennials. I recommend putting it in your flower beds at the back, because I love mixing edible plants in with perennial flowers, because it makes a good use of your garden beds, and you don't have to have a special place for it if you don't happen to have a good spot for a vegetable bed in the sun. It's great. I've got mine in my front garden bed behind my roses. So they work just fine there. The first year, it's recommended that you don't harvest them. And after the second year, you might harvest them lightly. But after that, they should be, you know, pretty good to go. And in climates in the northern Midwest and other places like that, with that type of cooler summer, you should be able to harvest them almost through the summer. In Missouri, we get a little more heat in the summer and humidity, and I don't think we get them past mid-June very much.
Yeah, we can harvest them here right up to first frost. So once they're frost, you shouldn't eat them. But yeah, they're really nice to have year round. So we're talking to Nina Murkici. I knew I was going to mess that up. Murkici Furstenau. She's our guest today. She's a food journalist and writer and has written 5 books. And we're talking to her about her latest, The Pocket Rhubarb Cookbook. What questions or comments do you have about rhubarb? Join in by calling 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And this is Garden Talk on the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Hope you can join us next week. We'll be broadcasting once again from Bayfield in Bloom. If you'd like to be in the audience, reserve your spot by going to wpr.org/presents. And we'll be really looking forward to seeing you there. But right now we are talking about rhubarb. How do you know when rhubarb is ready to pick, Nina?
So you want rhubarb stalks that are have a good color, that aren't especially thick, because I think that could mean it's an older, you know, it's been on too long. You want them, 18 to 24 inches long. You want to cut them and maybe twist the base of them, so you're getting them right from the bottom. You do not want the leaves, of course. Everybody probably knows that, but those have
I'm glad I'm not the only one.
I'm having a hard time today, but they have an acidic quality to them that are not good for humans. Let me just put it that way.
Yes.
And you want only the stalk itself.
Yes.
And so the stalks that I had out in the Pacific Northwest were really long. I don't think they normally are that long. I think that those were kind of, like I said, they could have been an alien rhubarb plant.
That just amazes me. When I read that, I was like, you're kidding me. That's so tall.
I did not know what it was at first until the stalks were red. And I was like, oh my goodness, that's a rhubarb. But it was a special place out there. But in Missouri, the stalks of my plants get to be about 3 feet. And I would say that's probably the max. You know, you're going to want to cut those more at 12 inches, 18 inches long. And they'll be, you know, an inch in diameter. Maybe sometimes they get quite a bit thicker. They could get a little fibery, more fibery than you want, if mm-hmm. you let them get too fat.
I love to just like pull them. There's that wonderful little pop. It's so satisfying. I don't know why, but it really is. So now let's get to the cooking part of this
yes.
cookbook. Now that we went past the gardening part of it, there's like over 60 recipes in here. And where did you get all these recipes?
So I am now apparently a recipe developer. I didn't know I had that skill, but you know, after 9 months of cooking rhubarb, and I feel like I could say that is what I do now, at least when creating books like this. So I would, you know, take the plant, and I would think, okay, it's coming from the East. It comes through, it in historically came through particular cultures before it arrived here. And what might people have used that for in the kitchen? because I felt like that's a good place to start. I love food history, so I get a little nerdy about that. So I'm thinking it's coming through Central Asia. They have a lot of herbs. They have a lot of meat dishes that are savory and stews that are beautiful. And I thought, well, they probably were the first to use it in a culinary way. And I believe they were Persians and Central Asians. And so what would they have used it in? Sugar was not used in the quantities we use sugar today. So it was probably a savory dish. So there in the book, you'll see a stew with rhubarb in it. And I would, after I'd come to the conclusion that maybe this might be an interesting combination, I would look and see what's out there in the world already. And oftentimes there's amazing and ingenious cooks out there that have developed things. So I would read up on those recipes and then create something that I think would taste really good. And then I would test it. So what I was really surprised and pleasantly surprised by was rhubarb did such a nice job, because I think of it as a, you know, dessert produce to use. I keep wanting to say vegetable, but it is, we consider it a fruit, but it is a vegetable. So that's why I keep tripping up on that. But anyway, the fruit of rhubarb, we normally think of it as a dessert in lovely pies and cobblers and so forth. And you'll certainly want to make those, and they're in the book. But think about it with savory meats, because that tang is, it works so well against the richness of meat if you're a meat eater. And I think in the stew, it was fantastic. There was several times when I was really surprised. I just wasn't sure it would be a good pairing until I tried it. And I was like, you know, this really does lift the dish. I found that with lentils, which was interesting. I don't know if a lot of the listeners in your program eat a lot of lentils, but my family does. We come from part of the world where we make what we call dal. Oh, and sure. It's a really... you know, it's a comfort food. It's a home food. Mm-hmm. And I've never put anything like rhubarb in my dal. I can promise you that. But I tried it, and it was like the equivalent of, well, some dishes in India, you'll put lime or lemon in to kind of lift the flavor. And that's exactly what it did. So I found it really useful for that.
I saw that recipe, and as a vegetarian, I was like, oh, I think yeah. I've got to try that, because it just sounds so good, you know?
It was good. I still make it, because I, you know, when you're testing, you know, 70 recipes for the final, you know, 69 or 8 that get in the book, it's just, some of them stay with the family, and some of them, you know, are good, but you know, maybe you're not your absolute core recipes, sure. But that one is one we use.
Well, let's go to the phones. We've got Rose in Sturgeon Bay, who has a story about rhubarb. Go ahead, Rose.
Hi. As a kid, 3 o'clock was always treat time. And in the spring, around when the rhubarb came up, Mom would just hand us a paper cup with maybe a third of it with sugar. And we would go break the rhubarb off, wash it in the garden hose, and just sit and dip our rhubarb in the sugar and eat it.
I love it. I love it. That's a really
delightful.
Yes, and an inventive mom, too. That'll keep them quiet for a while. So, all right, Rose, thank you. What a great memory. Let's go to Nettie in Fond du Lac next. Go ahead, Nettie.
Oh, this is really interesting, because like Rose, my brothers and sisters and I also used to go out with a little bit of sugar and break off the rhubarb and eat it raw. Well, let me tell you, you do not want to eat too much rhubarb raw, because we did, and it's a really good laxative, let me put it that way.
No.
I am 75 years old, and ever since then, I'll eat if somebody else makes something with rhubarb, but I go back to that, and it's like, okay, maybe just a little.
Oh, thank you, Nettie.
Those ancients knew what they were talking about.
That's
even
right.
With the actual fruit of the rhubarb, you weren't even having the roots. So.
Yeah. Well, like we said, lots of fiber. So thanks, Nettie. I hope you get more. You should get this book, because there's a lot of really great ways to eat rhubarb that you probably hadn't thought of before. Speaking of which, we've had a couple of listeners email us that their rhubarb crisp is always runny. Now, they've tried cornstarch. They've tried maceration with sugar to pull the water out. Do you have any suggestions, Nina?
Oh, gosh. Well, I think I've probably used cornstarch in my recipe. I have to pull it up to look exactly. But it is a moist, you know, it has a lot of water in it. So if you are concerned about too much moisture, there is another way I got this from when I was making blueberry pies. You can take a green apple and you can grate it, and then you can put it in a clean towel and twist the water out of the apple. So it's really dry when you're done twisting the towel. And you can put that in your rhubarb. It's going to have a sour profile as well. It won't take away from the flavor of the rhubarb, but it will absorb extra moisture in your cobbler or whatever you're attempting to make. And it isn't adding any more starch.
Yeah, and I do that with blueberry pie for the same reason.
Yeah.
You do say 3 tablespoons of quick cooking tapioca.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. I can remember after nearly 7 years.
Sure. You can't remember all these recipes by heart? I'm surprised.
I don't know if trying the tapioca would be helpful in this case, but I didn't have the problem of having it be too much liquid. Mm-hmm. It seemed to work pretty well for me.
Okay. Well, there's some suggestions for you, so hopefully one of those will work. Kevin called, but he couldn't stay with us, and he wants to know, how can you tell if your rhubarb is too mature to harvest?
Ah, well, you know, I was using pretty mature rhubarb because I had like 40 pounds of it that I was trying to store up from all my testing through the year. And so some of it that I got early in the season was quite tender and young, but some of it was a little bit thicker and more fibery. You just end up cooking it longer. I don't know that you can't use it. I don't think there's a time that you have, well, maybe there is, but I didn't ever not use a stalk of rhubarb. I was able to salvage it. It may just take a little more, attention at the stove.
Yeah. And you don't take the real young ones and you don't take the really old ones. You take the middle ones, and you shouldn't harvest all of the rhubarb in one season anyway. You should leave some.
I would say a third of the plant. You mm-hmm. don't want to take it all. And also, you know, one way to tell, and maybe this isn't, something everybody knows, but you know, the plants, they have really large leaves, but some of the stalks have smaller leaves, and those are the ones probably you want to pick mm-hmm. because if they get really large leaves, they're probably older.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And they're kind of hidden underneath those big leaves. Yeah. So I was really, I like to try a lot of these recipes, but the ones that really grabbed me right away were the drink ones. And I thought, what a wonderful addition to a drink. Do you have a favorite?
Well, I like anything bubbly, so I like those. Let me see if I can. I don't want to like rattle pages in front of you, but
that's okay. I've got it. I can rattle pages too. Okay. So
So the drinks were delicious because you know I like that flavor, that sweet tart flavor is so refreshing, especially on a hot day. And if you're outside, you know, anything bubbly makes me happy. So I'm very, very easy to please when it comes to things like that. But I'm not as big on a lot of alcohol, but I really did like the rhubarb spritzer because it's with Prosecco, my favorite. Light, bubbly, celebratory kind of drink.
Yeah.
I also really like lassis. That's also from my family's part of the world. And if you like the tart taste, it's beautiful in a lassi. And what lassi is, it's a little bit like a smoothie, what we call a smoothie here, but it's lighter. It's yogurt and it's a bubbly water, or in India and on the street vendors, they would just beat it for a long time. But we have ways of making that easier. So I use bubbly water and then I would use rhubarb, and you can sweeten it with honey or sugar. I do sweeten it a little bit, but I actually really cherish that kind of tart, frothy taste when it's hot outside. It just makes me really cool. And that, so I do like that drink a lot.
Well, I experienced lemonade with mint in San Francisco a few years back, and I just love it. But you have mint lemonade with rhubarb, so I definitely want to try that one.
That'd be a good one.
Yeah, for sure. You know, we don't have too much time here, but I did have a question to ask you. Now, you have a cobbler, a buckle, a crumble, a crisp, and a Betty, okay? They're all similar, but they're different. Yeah. Do people ask you about the definitions on those?
I think probably people intuitively know, because those words come from what they look like, right?
Right. So that's true.
Cobbler's kind of cobbled at the top. A crisp is a little bit more crunchy. You know, something that's buckle, think about that, is sort of buckling in because the fruit's sinking. So there is a reason for those names. And I kind of did that on purpose because I like using those names.
Except for Betty. I'm not quite sure about
that.
That's
a little harder. Yeah, that one was a little, I think that's historically buried in time. Why it was called a Betty.
Did any of these recipes really surprise you? You talked about, you know, some of them, like the lentil dish, but were there some others?
Well, I just really, so it's not surprising, but in a way it reinforced the idea that those classic flavors of rhubarb and strawberry do taste wonderful together. There's a reason all of our families, you know, do like that and have liked it for generations, and it is really good. The surprise for me, I've been around a lot of cooks recently during this book, and one of the wonderful ladies I met in New York State at a dairy farm that's organic, she made a cobbler with rhubarb, and no, she actually put strawberries in hers. I put the rhubarb in for the recipes in the book, but it was delicious. And you know, there's a lot of great cobbler recipes, and many of the listeners probably have one that's their favorite. So you'll have to see, if you check out the one that's in this book, it is, you put the dough on the top of the fruit, and then, this is the part that freaked me out, you put a cup of boiling water over that dough. It does not feel natural, let me tell you this. It maybe does for other people, but it bakes up really well with a little crunch on top.
Okay, wonderful. Oh, Nina, it's been so good to talk with you, and everybody run out and get this, the Pocket Rhubarb Cookbook. It's really small, and it's chock full of really good things. So thank you so much for being with us. And thank you for listening to us. This is Garden Talk on The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Have a wonderful weekend.